everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is episode number 362. It's Top Cow Thursday, and we're going to be talking about the latest volume of Witchblade. And I have writer Caitlin Kittredge here with me to talk all about it. Thanks for joining me, Caitlin.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. I think we've talked before about having you on the show to talk about Lucas Stand from Boom, but we've never made it happen. So I'm glad we finally have you, and we'll have to have you back to talk about your Boom series as well at some point.
Absolutely. I'm happy to talk ad nauseum about my own work, actually.
Well, great. Before we start talking about that work, I always like to ask guests when they're on for the first time about their history with comics. Like, did you go up reading them? Like, how did you come to find yourself in the industry?
Yeah, I feel like I came to actually being a comics reader relatively late. As far as those things go, I started reading them in high school. And I wanted to be a writer way before that, but the two loves kind of meshed. When I started reading like old Vertigo, old Image, Batman, that kind of stuff in like the early 2000s. So I pretty much have been working towards that ever since.
Awesome. So you went to school for like creative writing and eventually made your way to the place where you wanted to be.
Yeah, very circuitously made my way into comics after college.
Well, what are some of the previous works you've done that our listeners may be familiar with? I mentioned Lucas Stand, but I know you've had other work as well, correct?
Yeah, my first comic was called Coffin Hill, and it was a horror comic for Vertigo, and I did the work on Lucas Stand, like you mentioned. I co-wrote that with Kurt Sutter, the guy who created Sons of Anarchy, and I do a creator-owned comic for Image called Thorough Lace, which is a sci-fi spy comic, and I write Witchblade, which is what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, Throwaways is a favorite too. I don't know how I forgot that you wrote that. We're definitely gonna have to have you back on. But I think most of our Top Cow listeners that tune in on Thursdays obviously know Witchblade. So let's start off. Why don't you tell everybody kind of what your version of Witchblade is all about?
Well, I was approached by Top Cow to pitch a relaunch of Witchblade. A little bit ago, and I was super, super, super thrilled and excited because I really enjoyed reading original Witchblade back in the day. And I told myself, I was like, you're never going to have another opportunity like this. Like, you just need to go big or go home. You just need to throw the kitchen sink at this and just put in everything that you wanted to see in the original comic. And I did, unfortunately, they weren't bored with it. So that's long story short, that's how it all started.
And how do you feel like, you know, for someone who's a fan of the old school Witchblade, what do you feel like are the big differences? I mean, it's such a different feel, but if you were explaining, like if somebody came up to you at a show and they said, you know, I love the classic Witchblade, you know, mm-hmm. I enjoy your take. Like, what are the kind of differences that you feel are most significant?
We started with a whole new host, like wielder for the Witchblade. So she's very different from Sarah and from Danielle. Not in a bad way, just different. I feel like she's a little more personal, a modern take on what the person wielding the Witchblade could be. And we, at least in the first arc, we kind of scaled down quite a bit, and we like really like focused in on like the micro of the story, like how Alex deals with being chosen as the host of the Witchblade, her first big demon fight. Basically, we just get strapped in alongside her for this crazy ride when she wakes up and is suddenly the host of a mystical artifact that's supposed to protect the world from demons.
Yeah, and we'll get into to that a little bit, but I wanted to go back to something else you said. You said you were a big fan of the previous version of Witchblade, so would you say that you were a Witchblade fan, like you read like all of it or some of it, or you checked in from time to time?
I was with it. I read about the first 20 issues consecutively, and then I checked in periodically from time to time. I mean, like, I was about 15 when I started reading it, and my taste kind of shifted away, right? And I got kind of pretentious in college there for a while, and didn't like to admit that I even read superhero comics, never mind anything else. But I got better, fortunately. I got over that. But yeah, I mean, like, I'm not like a fangirl, like obsessed in the sense that, like, I'm obsessed, but I'm definitely a big fan of what Mark Silvestri created with the original. And I love the world building and the shared universe that he came up with. And I was really, really excited to play in it. I didn't come at it from a standpoint of, oh, I have to fix this. I came at it from a standpoint of, how do I pay tribute to this? And at the same time, bring the story into the modern day.
Yeah, that's a really good approach. But I the reason I ask is I wonder, there's, when it's such a well-known property and so beloved by a certain section of fandom, and, you know, it was kind of part of the bad girl thing in the 90s, and I've talked with Matt Hawkins about this before, and part of the reason they decided to suspend it for a while is it still had that connotation of being kind of a bad girl comic, and it was all about the image, and it wasn't that, you know, like, it's not a great character, it's not a strong story, which was not true at all and wasn't ever true of the book. From day one, it was really a really well-written, really good, grounded story. It just happened to have, you know, some be in that same era, and, you know, Michael Turner art, and people kind of have that connotation to it. But, you know, a certain section of fandom that love it for that, and then you being a fan yourself of it. So that must have been like a couple of added things on there of feeling the pressure, right? So, I mean, did you kind of freak out a little bit when you were trying to come up with your
idea? I made peace with that really early on, honestly, that you can't be all things to all people when you're rebooting such an iconic title. And ultimately, some people are going to love it and some people are going to hate it. And fortunately, it seems like more people love it than hate it. But yeah, I mean, every time a title gets revamped or relaunched, some people are unhappy and they're going to take to the internet and let you know how unhappy they are. But that's okay. I mean, it's their right. That's what Twitter is for, right, as far as comics go. Yeah, but like I said, I have a ton of respect for the early Witchblade. Like, there were not a ton of other books at that time that had female leads. And as a girl who loves comics in that era, I was really, really appreciated that the comic existed, you know, independent of anything else. And I wanted to be that to the next generation. Essentially, I wanted to be like, you know, here's this awesome supernatural story. Here's this awesome character. You know, it's, you can pick it up if you're a fan of the original. You can pick it up if you have no idea what the original's about and just enjoy it. And I mean, I hope I succeeded. I can't say, that's not my place to say, but I really hope I succeeded in bringing that same sort of like joy to my readers that I felt when I picked up the first issue.
Well, just speaking for myself, I think you've done a bang up job, and we'll talk about that more. But so you pitched it, you got it, and then you allowed yourself that moment of freak out, and then now it's time to settle down and get to work. It kind of sounds like the way.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, like, I made peace almost immediately when I was asked to pitch that. Not everyone was going to love it, and it doesn't bother me. It's the business, and I don't let it make me self-conscious when I'm writing. So.
Yeah, and there was you mentioned supernatural and kind of a dark feel, and there is that aspect to this corner of the Top Cow universe, kind of the artifact universe at Top Cow, and it certainly existed in the first go round of Witchblade, but I feel like in the first go round it was a little more shiny, you know, like it was supernatural, but it was still, I don't want to say it had a superhero aspect, but it didn't feel as scary. There's a little bit of like darkness, almost a horror feel, like a more of a suspense to your story. Was that early on kind of a difference you wanted in tone from the original?
Yeah, I always liked the supernatural focused stories the best. In the original Witchblade, I liked the stuff with the demons and the secret societies and, like, you know, the mythos, supernatural world aspect of it. So that's what I really tried to play up in my take on it. And I come from a horror writing background, and I told Mark and Matt and Eric at Top Cow up front, I was like, look, I'm going for actually scary with this. Like, we're going to have demons, we're going to have ghosts, we're going to have all kinds of stuff. There's going to be a lot of blood spatter. It's going to be very dark compared to what the original was. Are you guys okay with that? And they said, yeah, great, go for it. So I did.
Yeah, and there's another aspect to it that we could really talk about too, because the Witchblade, and it's one of the things that makes the concept of Witchblade so great. Same thing with Spawn. I was actually talking to Brian Haberlin recently. They have the Witchblade Spawn, the new iteration of that coming out, and he and I were talking.
Oh, sure, right.
Yeah, it's awesome. But he and I were talking about the fact that both with Spawn and Witchblade, the fact that these powers and these concepts aren't tied to one person. So you can really think of it as this is just another Bear of the Witchblade. It's not like a relaunch or a reboot. It doesn't mean that Sarah never had it. You know what I mean? It doesn't discount anything that came before. This is just a new Bear, and this is her story, right?
Exactly. Like, there's in media, there's so many different iterations of the same stories, for better or for worse. I mean, like, there's TV, movie, comic book takes on dozens of properties, and they all manage to sort of exist side by side in these little, like, you know, universes on a string, basically. And I have no issue with that as a reader or a viewer, and I feel the exact same way about Witchblade. Yeah, like, I'm absolutely not saying that nothing counts before, like, you know, issue one of Take Two with Alex, like, you know, all that stuff still happened, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, this is going to be, now normally I don't ask questions like this, but, and you don't even have to give a straight answer, but it just popped into my head. But so does that mean that Sarah's still out there and we may see her show up, a little cameo?
That is above my pay grade. Okay. I can give, that is the straight answer I can give you, is that is above my pay grade. That is up to the powers of me.
You know what? Like I said, I usually don't go for questions like that. I probably shouldn't even have asked, because as soon as I asked, I was like, you know what? I want to be surprised if it does happen.
Yeah, I campaigned hard to bring more of the shared aspect of the shared universe into this iteration of the Witchblade. But like I said, it's not up to me. It's up to the higher powers up there.
Fair enough.
At Top Cow. So we'll see.
Fair enough. So I mentioned that I really feel like so far the first six issues of the book, Volume 1, really feel like, more so than a lot of comics I've read in a long time, one issue really builds off the other. It's kind of masterful storytelling in that way. And it's very much rooted in character, you know, and it's not to say that there weren't strong characters the first go round, but again, this is a more intimate take where I feel like we're getting to know Alex in a way that we never got to know Sarah. Like, she pretty early on, you know, kind of accepted, okay, I'm the Witchblade, I'm kind of the superhero, and I'm going to, you know, fight evil or, you know, fight crime. Alex is a little more thoughtful. Do you feel like writing character arcs and having your stories so rooted in emotion and intimately knowing the character, is that where your strength as a writer lies, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, all of my stories revolve around character, really, and you can't have decent stories without that depth of character, in my opinion. Like, I feel like all the stories I enjoy reading have that, and that's what I tried to emulate when I was learning to write myself. But yeah, definitely, like, Alex was the first thing that came to me when I was creating this, you know, relaunch pitch for Top Cow. I started with, okay, like, we have the Witchblade, we have the artifact, that's established, that's a legacy from the original comic series. Okay, now who actually is going to put this thing on and fight evil with it? Like, what's her deal? And then everything else in the story grew out of that.
How long did it? Alex is such a complex character. I find her to be fascinating. So it must have been, it must have taken you a while to build all these different aspects. You know, she has some like tragedies, some terrible things that have happened to her in the past. She has, you know, her first career as a news reporter and the drama that went with that. It seems like you kept just like fleshing her out. She seems so real to me. She's had all these different roles. What was that process like of creating such a complex character, or was it easy for you because that's what you do?
No, it really was a lot of work and a lot of back and forth with kind of honing down to what makes Alex. And I feel like the one thing all the wielders of the Witchblade have in common is this sort of constant survivors. Like, they all have darkness in their past, they all have trauma, they all have these things that either made them stronger or, you know, made them more cynical, more bitter, more compassionate, you know. And I feel like that, like, strength of character and that will to survive is really what they have in common. And Alex definitely has that. Like, she's very sort of withdrawn and analytical when we meet her. Like, she's left behind this very glamorous exciting, highly paid life as a TV news reporter to become a victims advocate in the Manhattan DA's office, just because she felt like that was what she needed to be doing due to a lot of personal tragedy that she experienced. But she is fully willing to jump in with both feet into this new world of still protecting and helping people, but she's protecting and helping them by fighting demons and stopping the apocalypse and all that good stuff.
Yeah, just your typical Friday afternoon, stopping the apocalypse. No big deal.
Pretty much. Yeah, for Alex, definitely.
Well, let's talk about the look of Alex. Did you, as you were creating her, did you know right away like what she was going to look like, or was that collaboration with the artist on the book, Roberta Ingranata?
The only thing I really had in mind when I was creating her as a character was I wanted to set her apart from Sarah, because Sarah has such a distinctive look. Like, you know, you'd know instantly who that character is if you right. just saw her, you know, in like a cover of a pinup or something. And I was just like, all right, why don't we just visually sort of move her away from that and make her distinctive? Not because there's anything wrong with the way that the old style looked or the way Sarah looked. I just wanted to signal to readers that this is a new thing. You know, this is a new chapter, a fresh start. But the way that Alex actually looks is completely down to Roberta. Like, I gave her some guidelines and a couple of photos that I pulled off of Google, and she just totally ran with it. She's amazing.
Yeah, how is that collaborative process between you two? Did you guys click right away? Do you have like the same sensibilities as far as storytelling and values and things like that?
Oh yeah, we are like so simpatico. It was crazy. Like I've always had a good luck collaborating with artists. I've been very fortunate. I've always been friends at the end of the project with everyone I've worked with. But she and I just like really clearly kind of came from the same place, the same generation, same cultural backgrounds, comics wise. And like I like had to type a couple of sentences about Alex, and she came out looking exactly the way I pictured, which never happened before. So I feel really, really, really lucky to have found her. So,
yeah, her art is beautiful. And what I find interesting, you know, we're talking about kind of this new take and wanting to take a little bit darker. There's a softness to Roberta's art, her rendering and her line work, but it doesn't lack for strength at all.
Oh, no. And no, I mean, she's a huge talent. Like, I think she's going to be one of the titans of the industry as far as art goes, honestly. I think in, like, 20 years, she's going to be a household name as far as comic book artists go. So, at least, you know, I'm glad I got her at the beginning when she would still work with me.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, it's beautiful artwork. You know, Alex is an attractive, you know, young woman. The artwork's beautiful. But she also manages to bring a menace to it and a tone. There is that feel of kind of creepy, noirish, you know. And we probably should mention Brian Valenza as well, because some of that has to do with you know, the tone that's brought on by the colors.
Oh yeah, Brian's awesome. Like, he got what we were trying to do. He read the script. He got what we were trying to do, and he did an amazing job. Like, that really like washed out, muted, like, wintry palette that's all through the first six issues is just so beautiful. And it's hard to find somebody who goes that subtle with comic book art, I've discovered. And it's just, I was blown away when I saw the first issue all colored and put together. But yeah, Roberta and Brian together are just like unstoppable. So I feel like they do all the heavy lifting, honestly.
Well, yeah, I kind of feel like, I mean, now that you're talking about kind of that muted and washed out look, yeah, that, I mean, that's the difference, right? Like, usually superhero comics, the colors are a little more bold, a little more vibrant, and it sets that tone. And this, it is so much softer. And when she starts to manifest the powers, the smoke, it's just so creepy. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, Roberta and I went back and forth for a long time, like, designing the actual Witchblade armor together, and it came out better than I ever could have hoped. So I'm super excited when we finally got to do the big reveal.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I feel like it's such a good time to bring back a strong female character like this. And you and Roberta gave her such a different look that it's such a break from the past. Because we've talked about how there's been different bearers of the Witchblade in the past, but oftentimes they looked very similar. Alex looks so different. And I know that that's probably something that you and Roberta are going to be able to explore in story. Like, okay, why does it manifest for her this way? And I can't wait to find out. But it's definitely a unique look. So that was something that you two planned to make her look so significantly different from iterations before?
Yeah, I planned it from the beginning. I said actually, when Eric Stevenson at Image approached me about pitching, I said, I would love to do this, but I'm telling you right now, I'm going to completely redesign the armor. I'm just going to reboot it from the ground up. I hope that's okay with you guys. And they said it was. And then, they just let Roberta and I go with it and discuss it and kind of workshop it together. And it turned out great. But yeah, we decided really early on, we wanted her to be completely covered. And like way more sort of like organic looking and menacing and like she could, you know, F you up a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
because you said, the monsters she faces are so scary, at least in the first arc. Like, you want something that looks like you can stand up to that.
And I always thought, you know, Michael Turner is my favorite comic artist of all time. My daughter's name is Aspen, for God's sake. And so I would never say that his, you know, the original Witchblade doesn't look cool. But what I will say, I always want, like, how do you fight in that? It's not necessarily practical. So I feel like this new version is much more practical based on the things that Alex is going to face.
Yeah, and our main inspiration was that the Witchblade really is part of Alex. Like, it's tied to her. That thing on her wrist never comes off. And then the armor grows out of that. The armor's also part of her. Like, you know, it's basically like a tool that she uses to do, you know, what she can do to keep humanity safe. And like I just said, I want it to be organic fantasy demon fighting body armor, and Roberta did an awesome job.
Yeah, I agree. And I haven't heard anybody that has come across it who hasn't liked it. I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that, you know, it's still clinging to the past, but yeah, I think it looks terrific, because again, it gives that feel of something creepy, of something supernatural, of really capturing the corner of magic, you know, the concept of magic. I mean, Witchblade, it's a magical artifact. It should look
absolutely
weird and strange. So,
yeah, it's a magical artifact. It fights, you know, hell beasts and ghosts and monsters. It should look like it could do that. And it's the other abilities that we sort of played around with, like, you know, the shadow smoke and stuff that you see in the first couple of issues. Like, she's just learning how to use it, and the like magical blades that come out of it the first time she gets attacked, like, with it, that was all sort of leading up to her actually being in the full armor.
Yeah, it looks great. Listeners, if you haven't checked it out, do yourself a favor. It really looks cool. Let's go back to talking about character a little bit. There's a lot of great supporting characters you've created here in this first arc, both male and female. And not to say there's going to be a huge cast going forward. I mean, obviously Alex is the star, but do you enjoy writing a large cast when you write your stories?
I think I tend to start to have a panic attack if I have about more than 10 main people in the comic. So, I'm not going to be writing like the X-Men anytime soon. Let me put it that way. But I really, really, really enjoyed coming up with what we lovingly call Team Witchblade among ourselves on the creative team. And I'm excited to begin to slowly introduce more characters as we introduce more aspects of the world. But like I said, very slowly, we're not planning to have like a cast of hundreds or anything anytime soon.
Okay, fair enough. I think probably around, seven, six to eight maybe is the sweet spot that I like to read about, because I think it gives the writer, you know, more of a chance to spotlight characters and get to know them. So I'm sure that's something you have planned, right? We're going to learn more about these characters and their past as we move forward.
Absolutely, yeah. We let our fan reaction guide us a little bit too, as far as the storylines that play out in the next couple of arcs for the supporting cast. Because there were a couple characters that people just really responded to, like, super positively, and I was like, all right. I like this character too. Let's give him a bigger storyline. Let's give him a little more of a meaty role going forward. So, you know, bumping him up.
Well, let's talk a little bit about fan reaction then. Has it been mostly positive?
Overwhelmingly positive. I mean, I can count the, you know, sour grapes comments I get occasionally on social media on like one hand compared to the responses I get that are positive. And I mean, that's what I live for. I love my fans. I want to interact with readers who like my stuff. So I don't really give that other stuff another thought, honestly.
Yeah, you can. I mean, like you said before, you can't please everybody, you know, all the time.
No.
When I read the first issue, I wasn't sure what to think. I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this. I read the second one. I was like, okay, I think I know where it's going. By number three, I was like, yep, okay, I'm in. Did you have a lot of that kind of wait and see reaction as well, or did it seem like people were right in from the beginning?
It was actually really shocking how quickly people just like embraced it and jumped on board with it. I was actually really surprised because I tend to be more like you. Like usually stuff takes a little bit to win me over unless it's just like amazing and ticks all my boxes and blows me out of the water immediately. But it was really, really great because I would have honestly been fine if there had been sort of a slow build over a couple of issues, word of mouth, more people reacting to it positively, but we got so many positive responses to that first issue. Like it was crazy. Like Roberta and I were texting back and forth just being like, look at all these tweets, look at all this stuff on Instagram. We were just like, neither of us had ever done a book that got this sort of reaction before, so we let ourselves have like, you know, 5 minutes of just like jumping up and down a little bit, I think.
And were Mark and Matt really happy with the way the first arc has played out as well and the fan reaction? I imagine they have to be.
They must be. No, they've been super supportive and very positive about everything. So yeah, it's been really great. A really great experience working with them.
Yeah, I feel like, diversity is such a buzzword now, and not to say I dislike it or, you know, inclusion and diversity. Yeah, it's great. But I guess I just am so overly optimistic and such a dreamer about I want to get to the point where it's so normal that it stops being a thing, if you know what I mean. Like, can we stop saying, you know,
yeah,
books, girl
books? I often say to my writer friends and my creator friends, like, I would love to stop being a woman in comics any day now and just love to be a writer of comics.
Exactly.
But, and I mean, representation is super important. And it was really important to me that we find a female artist for this book because I wanted it to be an all-female creative team. I felt like for a book like Witchblade, that was important. And it was something that needed to be done. It needed to have attention called to it just because of, like, what's going on in the wider entertainment industry right now is a perfect example of why I fought so hard for that.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, these are our stories, right? I'm a big believer that you can tell a lot about a society and certain generations of society through the fiction and the stories they tell. And so that's why the stories we tell need to be inclusive and they need to be representative of, you know, all the different parts of our society. Because when people realize, right, this is what the society looks like. Everybody needs to be able to look at a story and have somebody that looks like them and relate and all that. So I want to get there to where it's, you know, it stops being a thing. So, I think it's great that it's you and it's Roberta and there's strong female characters in the book. There's great male characters as well. You know, you guys aren't like swinging the pendulum all the way over.
We actually had a big discussion about how we were going to avoid tokenism and basically just lapsing into sort of checking boxes for the sake of checking boxes, which is always a fine line to walk when you're trying to write a comic that's representative and, like, you know, sort of step away from your own point of view and, dare I say, your own privilege a little bit and figure out what would actually be representative of both your audience and the world of your story. And I, right off the bat, I was like, well, you know, she lives in New York City. Like, not everybody in the cast is going to be Lily White. She's probably not going to be the only chick, you know, we just real basic stuff like that. We discussed it in advance, but like, I feel like I got really lucky, both with the support I got from Top Cow, finding Roberta, and just the fan response. I feel like it was kind of the perfect storm in a positive way, as far as that stuff goes.
Yeah, I agree because, you know, New York is a very diverse place. And I think you guys are doing a good job of making this feel realistic and grounded in New York City. It's story and character first. And if you want it to be realistic, then it needs to, you know, be inclusive. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go back and talk a little bit about Alex again. You mentioned her role as a victim's advocate, and I feel like it's a great choice because she herself may be the one who needs an advocate more than anybody based on what she's been through
past. Oh yeah.
What she's going through now. So was that was that something you conceived for like right from the start and then you built backwards, or was it in the middle, or did it all kind of happen organically?
Yeah. It was actually, my best friend is a child therapist, and she was actually the one who suggested that be Alex's job because I was kind of banging my head against it, trying to come up with something that was sort of in the same sphere, say, like, you know, a cop or,
right.
you know, a reporter or something. And we actually ended up making her an ex-reporter, somebody who was still invested, still came into contact with people who were dealing with, like, you know, being the victims of crimes or something like that, but not exactly the same. So I owe her a huge kudos, and I bought her a very nice dinner once the pitch got approved, because Eric was like, oh yeah, we love the podcast, it's a great idea. And I was like, yep, it sure is.
Yeah, I mean, it is the perfect spot for her because it does show, you know, how her compassion, it shows how much she sacrificed. Cause you mentioned, you know, she had kind of this reporting, you know, glamorous globetrotting adventure kind of thing. And for her to give up something mm-hmm. like that to really, you know, fight for the little guy, so to speak, and fight for people who, you know, have had tragedy in their lives. It says a lot about who she is before we even get to really know her.
Yeah. Yeah. It's absolutely like she is selfless to a fault. So, and, she's just got the biggest heart, and she's also the most broken person you will ever meet. And just, she puts everyone else first, which she kind of starts to realize as the comic goes on might not always be the best strategy, especially when you're dealing with supernatural creatures that want to, you know, end the world and kill everyone you love.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating dichotomy because she has been through so much, and there's an inherent weakness because it feels like she hasn't necessarily healed from some of those things. But yet there is this
right.
strength of character from her compassion. So it's like these two different sides of her. And I feel like that's what makes her a hero, because despite that weakness that she may carry around, she's still going to stand up for what she believes in and fight for those that need it.
Yeah, she's going to keep standing up until she can't stand up anymore. Like, that's really her at her core is Alex just hates bullies, and she will not back down if she feels like you're victimizing somebody else. And I think that's what makes her such a great host for the Witchblade.
Yeah, and that's something that we've seen in different iterations of the Witchblade before, where the Witchblade has bonded with people where it was really kind of the dominant side. It completely, you know, it wasn't that way with Sarah, obviously, but other, you know, other iterations we saw, other bears of the Witchblade, where the Witchblade almost, you know, took control and overwhelmed. And I can see even more so than Sarah, I can see Alex standing up to the Witchblade and saying, we ain't doing that.
mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's a back and forth in the first three or four issues where the Witchblade's like, no, you have to let me go. Like, just let me do it. Let me take control. And Alex is like, no. Basically, like, I don't know you. Who are you? and she has a whole conversation with the main demon antagonist in the first arc about who Gozer that she's holding back because she's afraid. And, you know, she can save everyone except herself, essentially. And we come to realize that she's not holding back because she's afraid of what will happen. She's holding back because she's afraid that she will basically let go too much and like cause too much havoc while she's, you know, defending the city.
Yeah, and you end the arc on this cliffhanger, which I certainly didn't see coming. Alex, I have to tell you, you put Alex through so much in her past. Now, are you going to pull are you going to pull the rug out from under her again? Don't answer, because I want to read it for myself. But I just was like, really? Really? We're going to do this now? You're going to put her on this roller coaster?
Yeah. The best way I can answer that is that if you thought there were a lot of twists and turns and secrets in the first arc, you really ain't seen nothing yet. Because the second arc, we delve way more into the mythology and the sort of larger world of the Witchblade. And there's a lot of crazy turns that the story is going to take.
And still, are you still planning on using the same kind of structure with flashbacks to Alex's past as well? I mean, because there's still a lot that we don't know.
Yeah, there's actually going to be a couple little reveals about Alex's past, and we're actually starting to see the past of some of the people around her, including some of the antagonists, and starting to kind of see how she slots into this mystical world of the artifacts, of the battle between heaven and hell for Earth, all that sort of stuff.
Awesome. I really can't wait for more. It's really great. Congratulations, truly.
Well, thank you. I'm thrilled to hear that you enjoyed it so much, seriously.
Yeah, and if you fans are enjoying it as well, I know we have, you know, a lot of Thursday listeners that tune into Top Cow. Please let me know, and I'll be happy to pass the kudos along to Caitlin, or you can probably reach out to her directly on social media if you haven't already.
Absolutely. I populate a couple of social media things. I have Twitter, and I'm on Instagram, probably an unhealthy amount considering how much work I normally have to do in a day. But yeah, I'm findable on either of those.
Great. And I'll put links to those social medias in the show notes for everybody so they can find them. Is there any other work that you have on stands currently that you want to mention to your fans?
We talked a little bit about Lucas Sand at the beginning of the program, and issue 4 of that just wrapped not too long ago. The issue 4 of the second story arc, it's called Lucas Sand Inner Demons, and it's even more bananas than the first story, is the best way I can describe it. So if you like the first one, be prepared to have your face blown off by the second.
Yeah, and I would say, I would add to that, if you like characters that are kind of like no-nonsense, gruff, tough guy kind of characters and have it, you know, go supernatural as well, because that's a supernatural story, definitely check it out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Lucas Stand is like the funnest book to write, like, I swear to God. Like, I just, like, I was like laughing to myself a lot of the time. I was scripting it.
Yeah, it does go pretty over to the top at times. Mm-hmm. It's so much fun to read. Well, Caitlin, again, I want to thank you for joining me. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners, maybe upcoming projects or anything they should be on the lookout for?
The second story arc of Witchblade starts in August, and Witchblade Volume 1, which collects all 6 of the issues of the first arc, is coming out in July. So if you're a binge reader, you can catch up, and then the very next month you have the second arc starting. So, and like I said, Lucas Stand, all 4 issues of the second arc are on shelves now, and you can find trade paperbacks of most of my other stuff at comics retailers, bookstores, Amazon, the library, if you're old school.
Yeah, that's I definitely recommend Throwaways. I've only read the first volume, but it was really good. I'm definitely going to pick up the rest and check them out. Yeah, Lucas Stand, I was a fan from day one, totally blown away by Witchblade. So I'll remind all you listeners when the trade comes out, if you are a binge reader, as Caitlin said, so you can catch up. And I have a feeling, like, some things I read in trade, and then, like, I wait for the first trade, and then the first trade comes out, and then, I can't wait for the second trade. I have to start reading it in the single issue. So you may find yourself in that boat with Witchblade, which is a good boat to be in, so...
It's a good boat. Come into the boat. All the cool kids are in the boat.
That's right. That's right. Once again, I want to thank Caitlin for joining me, and thanks all you listeners for joining us as well. Don't forget, you can go to lrmonline.com for all past episodes of the podcast. Twitter.com/thecomicsource is where we can be found on Twitter. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us there. All 3 spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Quick reminder that Nick and I will be at Denver Comic Con this weekend. Let us know if you're going to be there. Track us down. We'll hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. Take a picture. You can tell us what you like about the show and even what you don't like, if that's the case. So once again, thanks for joining us, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.